Hello world, you're listening to Randomly Typed. I'm JS.
Hi, I'm Lance. Today we're going to be recording a new episode, similar in nature to the previous episode. It's not exactly a continuation, but if you haven't listened to the previous episode on ranked voting systems and the Condorcet criterion and paradox, it's probably a good idea you do so. Just so that you're familiar with the terms used there, because we'll be reusing a lot of similar ones. If you do want a super practical, condensed version of it, JS has come prepared to enlighten you all.
All right. Since I was editing the episode last week, I was like, maybe I should take notes to try to understand what Lance was actually saying.
I don't understand either, so we can just nod and go along.
Right, but with this summary, maybe we'll be able to understand.
Ourselves? Yes. Hopefully, yeah.
First, in all our theories, we were ignoring writings or circonscription, as we say in Quebec, because it changes pretty much everything and our theory are not based with those.
So we assume that one person's vote is equivalent to every other person's vote.
Wherever he is living, or they are living.
Yeah, regardless of the situation they're in, basically.
Yeah. Most countries are using the plurality method, where the party with the most vote wins. So you don't need necessarily 50% to win. As long as you have more than any other party, you're the winner. It's mostly designed for a two-party system, since when you have more party, you start to divide the vote. One of the problem is the spoiler effect. Let's say you have two parties, A and B. A has normally 60% of the votes, and B 40%. If you get the third party, let's say C, that is really similar ideologically to A, during the next election, you have a good chance of getting A 30%, B 40%, and C 30%. So A splitted his votes between A and C. So now B is winning, even if the population is more similar to the ideas of A and C. That's the spoiler effect. There's also rank ballots, where you choose in which order you would prefer a government to win. And this is maybe better than what we use right now, but still have some issues. We talked about the Condorcet criterion, which is a desirable criteria for any election systems.
It's like in isolation. If you took out of the party of multiple candidates and you compared one candidate to every other one individually and they're preferable, then they should win. Which is like a logical consequence of voting method, right? In that, like, if the one person is preferred by everyone else, then they should win.
Yeah. Afterward, we had the two round off system. You do a normal voting way like we do right now, but if there's no clear majority, you redo the election, but with only the two best parties. After you have the instant runoff, so you do your election, eliminate the worst one, and you start again. Honestly, I find this one pretty interesting, and that's the one we use for the Academy Award?
Something. I know nothing about
Something about
some award out there is given as a result of this system.
Yeah. And finally, we had the board account.
It basically is a ranked ballot, but just with some arbitrary function that converts like your first preference to a number of points, your second preference to a number of points. So it's still like a fixed ranked voting system, right? I don't see it changing much about the dynamics of voting in that sense. So that was a super good summary. Thank you.
I tried really hard to not be too complex.
So now that you know all of this, I want you to forget all of it.
Nice. Why did I do just that now?
So a lot of the terms are similar. We're still talking about ranked voting systems today. So where you indicate your preference for all parties from like 1, 2, 3, 4 until the last one. But we're going to talk about a system with different criteria today. Ken Arrow is someone of note. They came up with something called the Arrow's Impossibility Theorem, which has some interesting results, some interesting conclusions. In reading about this, I didn't find this one particularly mind-blowing, because from my opinion, it's a look at the very worst case of an election system, of a voting system, in that this is a proof that there exists no voting system that can be perfect, but practically speaking, things work.
So it's just theorem that prove that we are bad at doing votes?
we'll get to it slowly. This one's a bit of a complex one. I've reduced the complexity a bit in that there's a lot of extra like social science and politics and economy terms that are also involved with this. Yeah, this one might be difficult. So I hope you enjoy listening to us struggle through this, and hopefully it won't be a flop at the end.
Enjoy the ride.
So Arrow came up with two criteria for a system, a voting system that we would like. And these are kind of more rigorously defined criteria. The goal of this is to end up with a fair system, but fair is something that's not necessarily tangible for human purposes.
You could ask like 10 people and they will all give you a different answer of like, what's a fair system?
Right. And from what we saw in the last episode, there doesn't seem to be, at least from the systems that we've come up with so far, something that when you aggregate individual results, you come up with a clear winner, right? It all depends on how you count the results. So I think we're going to add a bit of rigidity to how we construct systems, voting systems today. And one criteria that we're going to define is something called unanimity. Unanimity is the situation where if everybody prefers something to something else, then in the final aggregated results, the first thing that was preferred should be ranked higher than the other thing.
Okay, that's an easy one, right? So if 100% of the people voted for it, that's the winner.
It's not exactly that. Let's bring it back to programming languages again. So let's say we have Rust, Scala, and Python, just so that we don't keep two that start with R's, because last time we used Ruby as an example, and I think it's a little bit confusing to have Rust and Ruby, which sound very similar.
Okay, sure.
So you have Rust, Scala, and Python as languages for the developer population to vote on the ultimate king or queen of languages. If literally everyone votes that Rust is preferred to Scala, not making a statement about the real world, just as an example, if everyone votes that they prefer Rust to Scala, in the combined results, Rust should be ranked higher than Scala. Not necessarily first in the list, but when compared to Scala, Rust should be ranked at a higher position. So that one intuitively makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Again, it's a little bit hard to define as like, is this the characteristic that makes something fair? We don't really know and we haven't really established. But it is one that we can kind of generally agree would be a good characteristic of a voting system.
But in reality, it's not super useful because you need 100% of the population to agree.
We'll get there. So the second criteria that's defined here has a long name. It's called the independence of irrelevant alternatives.
This is the worst name.
I know. We should abbreviate it to IOIR.
Okay, no.
IOIA, sorry.
Okay, let's use a real name.
Only vowels. So what that is independence of irrelevant alternatives. If everybody prefers Rust to Scala, then changing your ranking of Python shouldn't affect the final aggregate that Rust is ranked higher than Scala.
Right.
And that these should be independent, right? Python could be ranked first, Python could be ranked in the middle, Python could be ranked last, but as long as people prefer Rust more than Scala, then Rust should appear higher than Scala in the end.
So it doesn't change the relation between Rust and Scala.
Exactly. So now we have these two desirable characteristics. So what Ken Arrow demonstrated was that if we want a ranked voting system with these two characteristics in them, then that system entails that there's a possibility of there being a dictatorship.
All right, that escalated quickly.
It sounds surprising, right? You're like, what did we do wrong so far? We've only just come up with two very arbitrary characteristics, and that's a very bold statement to make.
Right.
What I mean by that is that one person alone could have the power to determine the entire outcome of the election.
Okay, you'll need to explain because I don't see how it's possible.
The thing is that it's kind of in relation to all other people, but there is still one individual out there who can say, in the absolute worst case, their vote is the only one that mattered.
Okay.
In a very specific situation.
But is there a problem?
Practically speaking, no. Because this situation would only come up once in a while. But the proof says that any system which tries to ensure these two variables will invariably come to at least one outcome in one situation where the vote is not fair, in quotes. And that one person decides the outcome. It's not a democracy in that one outcome.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's not fair, but...
Right. Okay. That's a fair challenge. Regardless, I think it's the point is that one way of seeing it is everyone's votes canceled out except for one person.
Yeah, sure. I can live with that.
So let's go through this. Let's say we have three people, Alice, Bob, and Charlie. And we have the three languages, Rust, Scala, and Python. Let's pretend that everybody prefers Rust to Scala. Everybody prefers Scala to Python. Sorry, Pythonistas.
So they're all voting the same thing.
Right now, they're all voting the same thing. Everybody prefers Rust to Scala. And so by the unanimity criteria we had before, we know that the final results place Rust above Scala. Right. And also by that same unanimity principle above Python, Scala above Python.
Sure.
So now let's say everybody changes their minds. And now everybody ranks Scala higher than Rust. By the same argument, by this unanimity principle, now Scala must be placed higher than Rust in the final outcome. Make sense so far?
Sure.
But the thing is that like the outcome changed, right? Like now it's different.
But it's okay since the input changed.
Right. But somewhere along that line of people changing their minds to prefer Scala over Rust, the final outcome shifted.
Sure.
In this one case, there's only three people. And so let's say Alice changed their mind first. We don't know exactly what the final system would look like since this is kind of like a more abstract definition of a system that would work. But let's say Alice switched first while the other ones did not. Then we could imagine that Rust would still be preferred. And then let's say Bob switched. Now we can imagine that Scala would be preferred because more people prefer it to Rust. You can imagine that system, right?
But it doesn't follow your unanimity rule.
Right, doesn't follow unanimity rule. But we do know that there is a singular point along that spectrum in which the results flipped.
Sure.
We're going to call that point and that person's vote the pivot point. So in this case, let's say that Bob is pivotal. So Alice did something, and if Bob goes along now, then Bob made the pivotal choice to change the ultimate final aggregate result. So now let's look at the situation where Bob and Charlie, they prefer Scala to Rust, and they prefer Rust to Python.
So they both have the same vote.
They both have the same vote, and it goes Scala, Rust, Python. Alice, however, has the same vote, but they place Scala last. So at this point, for the top spot, when comparing Scala and Rust, Bob is still pivotal in that Charlie could have voted Scala, and Alice is voting Rust. So Charlie's preference ranks Scala higher than Rust. Alice's preferences rank Rust higher than Scala. And so now Bob has a choice to make and is now in that pivotal position. And in the current configuration, Bob prefers Scala to Rust. So now we can, in the final results, say that Scala is preferred to Rust and Rust is preferred to Python, in this case by unanimity. So everyone prefers Rust to Python, even though they're ranked in different orders in that in one position, Python is ranked twice in the second position, and everyone else, it's in last. Still, people prefer Rust to Python. So we can say by all of the rules that we've constructed so far that the order is now Scala, then Rust, then Python.
Sure.
So now let's have Bob swap their choice of Scala and Rust only. Bob is still the pivot, and Bob prefers Rust over Scala now when comparing those two. So we can say that Rust is now preferred over Scala. But all Bob did was change his preference of Rust and Scala. So by the independence of irrelevant alternatives, we know that the order of Python in relation to Scala hasn't changed. Because Python was ranked lower before, and we only swapped Rust and Scala.
Right, so it's still true.
It's still true. So by those two things that we just said, by Bob being a pivot and by the independence of irrelevant alternatives, then we know that the order is Rust, Scala, and Python. Whew. If you're still following along, you're a soldier. We're at the last step, though. So now let's have everybody except for Bob swap Python for Rust. If you want to follow along, check the show notes. We'll include tables to keep this entire train going. But right now, the configuration is Alice likes Python, Rust, then Scala. Bob likes Rust, Scala, Python. And Charlie likes Scala, Python, Rust. And we've been able to do these swaps based on only the criteria we've been defining so far. Everybody except Bob just swapped Python for Rust. Because of irrelevant alternatives, we know that Scala is still greater than Rust because everybody's individual preference shows that Scala's preferred more than Python. And for the same reason, Rust now is preferred more than Scala. But we're in a weird situation now. By following all of these rules, we end up in a situation where Rust is greater than Scala, and Scala is greater than Python, but Bob is the only person who prefers that outcome, and that everybody thinks that Python should beat Rust, except for Bob. So Alice voted Python, Rust, Scala, so Python's ranked higher than Rust, and Charlie ranked Scala, Python, Rust. So now we're in this weird situation where this one person is acting as a dictator for the Rust-Python pair.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, to summarize everything so far, Bob is acting as a pivot, some kind of arbitrary pivot that we've defined early that makes Rust preferred to Scala. And we know that Bob is dictating, the only one in this situation, dictating that Rust is greater than Python. And the end result is that Rust is greater than Scala and Scala is greater than Python, which is a bit strange, right? So Bob is doing a lot. We know that in one of the pairs, Bob is dictating, and the other one, we just have this arbitrary pivot position. Like, it seems like it's true based on this unanimity principle and how if we slowly change, we end up getting a different result. So what we could do, though, is we don't know for sure, like, what this pivot means, right? Maybe just Bob just happened to be the pivot in this one example. We don't really know. So what we could show is that Bob is always the pivot in any pairing, regardless of the scenario.
Okay, what does it mean?
So if we did this entire thing over again, but swapped Python for Scala, we could end up at the same result, right? Because it's just, these are arbitrary terms. Now we can say somewhere along the line of becoming pivotal, let's redo everything, but say that the preferences of everybody, Alice, Bob, and Charlie, are Rust, Python, and Scala. So now we've swapped Scala for Python, and we could say that Rust is currently beating Python by unanimity. So if people slowly start preferring Python over Rust, then there's going to be a pivot point at some point. If we decide that Rust beats Python, you can kind of like assign some kind of directionality to it in this very contrived example. And that, like, first Alice needs to stop liking Rust over Python. And then somewhere along the line, this pivot person needs to come and then add their choice to that. So let's say our order is right now Alice, Bob, and Charlie. If Alice starts preferring Python, then Bob is now in a position to become the pivot point.
But just because Alice was the first to change.
Right. So at this point, it's just Bob or Alice.
Right.
But you could do it in the inverse direction too, right? So if Charlie starts preferring Python, and now Bob is in a position of determining who the pivot point is, it's either Bob or Charlie at this point, who are pivot points.
Right, but here the pivot point is not about Bob. It's just the person being at the right moment, changing his mind at the right moment.
Right. It is just the person changing their mind at the right moment. But if you think there's multiple people in multiple directions for two decisions, and in this one contrived example, we have that, like, if you're going in one direction of preference, like people are starting to like Python more than Rust, you can always kind of counter that in the opposite direction by having people starting to prefer Rust over Python. Like, you need two people to become pivotal in Rust beating Python, and two people in being pivotal that Python is beating Rust. And it's based on there's an order there based on the actions of previous ones. So we can say that Bob, this arbitrary figure, can be put in a situation where they are the only person that can pivot based on the preferences of others.
Sure.
So there is a situation out there in which Bob can make that choice by being the singular pivot in every direction, because there's two directions that are opposing what it could be.
So, okay. But here, is it really a problem? Because in like a closed election, that doesn't change anything because everyone casts their ballot at the same time.
Right. So that's the thing. I think practically, it's not that big of a deal. It's more just like philosophically,
There's one person that can...
A singular person, and they are the only person whose vote was considered when looking at this election.
I wouldn't even agree with this, because we only look at his ballot because all the other ballots were considered before. So,
right.
I don't see it as a real problem.
I personally don't either. So it's more of a clickbait title than anything. But it is interesting to, like, at least just based on these very two simple, primitive rules that we want, we can show that, in this case, a singular random person
has the control.
Has control over the entire ranked ordering of this election.
Right.
So, yeah, and we can say that any system which upholds these two characteristics, which is a ranked voting system, is susceptible to being a random dictatorship, as this is, right? I mean, dictatorship is a very strong word, and it evokes a different meaning to different people. But in this strict definition, this scenario is always possible if these two characteristics exist.
But I would prefer to call it random pivot. I think it's more representative of what it is.
Right. I would tend to agree. It's just that one person can consistently be the pivot in every scenario.
Depending...
On the scenario.
Yeah, exactly. In that specific scenario.
Yes. So practically, this ties in a little bit with the previous episode because we still don't really know what we're doing when it comes to voting systems. We do know that we don't want a dictatorship. We tend to not want one. We don't want to like designate an individual as the sole dictator.
But if it's random, is it a real problem?
Right. If it's random, you don't even know who it is. It's in a sense like we know that these three things cannot coexist together as a result of this proof.
Okay. Though I can live with a random dictator that doesn't know that
they are the dictator. Yeah. I could probably live with that too. And if we didn't, we know what we would need to sacrifice in this super contrived system with only three rules. Let's say one day we decide that that is not an acceptable criteria anymore. Well, we can give up unanimity, or we can give up this independence of irrelevant alternatives. So we can kind of make smarter choices about what these systems are and how they behave, and can kind of like engineer a voting system that's fairer for all within these constraints.
Nice. I see.
Whew. This is definitely out of my depth. So if I said something wrong and you're like some pro social game theorist out there or something, let us know. We'd love to hear from you and we can add some clarification. Yeah, tough one. I think we'll maybe go back to more computer science-y, hardcore computer science topics next time, if that's fine.
That's perfect with me. So are you saying that we don't have a third episode on elections?
I don't think so. No, I think this one's the last one. This one tired me out. Whew.
Too much elections.
Yeah, this is complicated stuff. Whoever came up with this like could really work through all the scenarios. Well, we know Ken Arrow, that's you.
We'll find you.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again, Lance.
All right, thanks. See you next time.
See you next time. You can contact us and find show notes on our website, randomlytyped.com.
The intro music is by Vansky.
Thank you, Vansky.
And thank you, listener, for indulging us.